Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tuning in, Sean and Seth with you, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. If you missed it this morning, the big news coming down from Tom Pelissero is where I first saw it, NFL Network. Shake up in Houston, longtime respected assistant Romeo Crennel, not expected to return to the Texans as their defensive coordinator. Sources tell Tom Pelissero and Ian Rapoport, contract up soon, could return as a senior assistant, could retire. Defensive line coach Anthony Weaver, a top candidate to become the defensive coordinator. Seth, this just the latest in a short string of changes going on over at NRG Stadium. And if you're to believe John McClain tweeting last night, they are not done yet. But that was tweeted before the Romeo news. The news over the weekend, John Pagano, outside linebacker coach, fired. Chris Olsen, VP of football administration, basically their salary cap guru, fired. And now Romeo Crennel. Sounds like this is going to be more of a soft landing than a termination or a firing.
Well, just like the last time that he lost his job as coordinator, he got
booted upstairs.
Demotion by promotion, right. He became the assistant head coach and advisor and all of that. I would imagine that would still be available to him if he wants it. Maybe this will be the time where he says, all right, that's it for me. I'm done. I'm just going to go. I think he still keeps his permanent home in Kansas City.
Does he?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So I'm intrigued by the way this is all trickling out. Remember when O'Brien took over as head coach?
Yeah, the team has announced none of this, to be clear.
There was like a Black Saturday, remember, where he fired everybody all at once, which is normal. You go in and a new coach comes in, gives a guy, people a chance to interview and whatnot. So then it's customary to do it all at once. This has been a slow trickle, and you get the sense there's going to be more. John Pagano being gone as linebackers coach is an interesting one because one of the things Texans really struggled with this year was setting the edge in the run game. They were one of the worst in the league in yards per carry on outside runs, and a lot of times that was because of the outside linebackers. Also, you've got young guys that are projects that maybe O'Brien just expected to see more from. Maybe he thought Brennan Scarlett was going to take another step forward as a pass rusher this year. We have Jacob Martin, who shows potential. Jacob Martin is drastically undersized, so he's going to have to become
bigger.
What's that? Well, not necessarily. You know what I was thinking of is Robert Mathis. Robert Mathis from the Colts. I think he played at about 245 or so. Came into the league at like 235 and figured out a way to get it done. And I think Martin's actually lankier than Robert Mathis because Mathis was only 6'2".
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know. Maybe Cushing takes over as linebackers coach. Maybe Akeem Dent does. I don't know. But they're gonna keep tweaking things. I can't criticize O'Brien for firing Chris Olsen until I see what he does to replace Chris Olsen. Mm-hmm. I think there was a knee-jerk reaction by a lot of people to say, oh, wow, O'Brien's going for total control now. He already had control over Chris Olsen, unless I'm mistaken. Unless you want to believe that Bill O'Brien isn't actually the GM, then maybe Chris Olsen wielded just the same amount of power in the GM committee. I don't think anybody's buying that. So this is just kind of a repositioning and, like, just like the saying that people love to say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting a different result. Well, this falls into that category. Look, they want things to be better. They're going to make some changes.
All right, so this time on Friday, Seth, we were trying to predict what the answers would be for the Astros, particularly Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman, at FanFest on Saturday. They were the two most prominent players who were going to be there. Other than Chris Davinsky, they were the only two players that were there that were with the Astros in 2017, where the cheating allegations lie. And they both met with the media. Now, to be clear, Bregman met with the media. The audio we had wasn't great. You've probably seen it by now. Bregman kind of went Arian Foster on the media. He's like, the commissioner has issued their report. Major League Baseball has made their decision, and we're moving forward. He said that no fewer than five times within a seven-question span. So most of what we're about to do involves Jose Altuve. But, Seth, I posed three of the questions to you that I thought would be posed to them last week, and you tried to predict their answers. So we have Seth's answers, right, Jonesy? All right, the first question is, were you involved in the sign stealing? So did you engage in any of the sign stealing activity?
look, I participated in the investigation. We're supposed to keep everything we talked about in the investigation. And I also don't want to get involved in this game where the media starts deducing who did and did not by which players deny it. So out of respect to my teammates and other people in Major League Baseball, I'm going to keep that all quiet.
Yeah, there's no way in hell they actually said just that. That was way too...
Well, the very beginning...
I was giving up too much.
The very beginning was actually pretty accurate, because here's Alex Bregman.
You know, the commissioner came out with a report. MLB did their report, and the Astros did what they did, meaning they made their decision on what they're going to do. And I have no other thoughts on it.
Yeah, I should have cut mine off right where Bregman did, and then I would have nailed it. The part about me saying not getting into the game of, okay, who's denying and who's staying mum, that's what I would be thinking as a player. Like, if I'm going to be a good teammate, maybe I didn't sign steal, but I also know that if I start saying no and various other guys are saying...
Then have a checklist.
Then it becomes a game of, okay, who's not adamantly denying it?
Right. And then, someone's lying.
Right, or then somebody lies and it comes out later when the transcript's revealed. Because one thing we know from the steroid investigation, baseball will tell you they're going to keep things anonymous, and then they get unanonymous
real
quickly.
They're poor at it.
So I would imagine all of these Astros players have to be very careful, because I'm sure baseball told them it'll stay anonymous, but they can't expect it'll stay anonymous.
All right, here's the next one. This is about the buzzer allegations. What about the buzzers underneath your jerseys?
Absolutely not. It sounds like science fiction to me, and I wish I would have been creative enough to think of that myself.
All right, so that Bregman was asked about it and said, we don't have the audio on Bregman because it was kind of muffled. He basically said, that's ridiculous, and then just moved on to the next question. Here is Altuve on the buzzers.
I wasn't upset, to be honest. Even thought it wasn't true. You know, we all know that you know, some people made that up. And like I said, the best thing that happened to me was the MLB investigate that, and, you know, they didn't find something. But at the same time, you know, you can't control everything. You know, you control what you can control it.
All right, so pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty adamant denial.
Yeah.
And I guess the one thing I would say about that is if there were any truth to that at all, that was clearly an instance where you'd have to be saying that it was Altuve acting alone, because none of his teammates, if his teammates knew about it, they wouldn't be trying to rip the jersey off. So there's just so many things about it. It was interesting, because I was with a bunch of non-Houston people this weekend. And when you watch that video, if you've got it in your head that the Astros did it, and you watch that video, then it's stark confirmation that, oh, yeah, he definitely did it.
Did they think he did it?
Yeah. They were very politely telling me that, like, well, you watch the video, and look, it's obvious. But it's...
Did you politely tell them to go to hell?
I did. I frankly did. But no, I understand that part of it, because honestly... We understand Altuve's personality and everything, and all of that looks very... His response to Ken Rosenthal's question didn't seem out of character for Altuve. For people that don't know Altuve, watching that response, it seems like damning evidence that, yes, he was doing it. But I get and I understand that. That's what's so unfortunate about it all, because it is... There's no actual merit behind any of it, or no actual evidence.
Last one. Does this whole episode of the sign stealing and the punishments and the investigation, does this taint the 2017 championship?
I hope it doesn't. It doesn't for me personally, but I know that our fans can make whatever decisions they want. But what I remember was a really special moment when this entire city was recovering from Hurricane Harvey, and we did something that nobody thought we could do. And nobody can take away those memories. There's not anything that'll change how I felt in that moment. Mm. See, that's a brilliant pivot there, where I just appealed to sentimentality. I didn't actually even answer the question.
That's a good use of tragedy.
Yes.
Well done. That was Seth's prediction on what the answer would be. This is the closest, I guess, we could find to an answer to, is the title tainted?
Believe me, in the end of the year, everything will be fine. We're going to be in the World Series again. People don't believe it. We will. You know, we will. Like, we made it last year. We went one game away of winning it all. You know, I'm happy for the Nationals. They won everything. They're a really good team. They deserve it, but we'll be in the World Series again. Maybe with them, maybe with another team.
Calling a shot.
I like that.
I do too.
Yeah, it was a different answer kind of threw a different question,
there,
too.
Yeah, there was we couldn't really find one that said, is the title tainted? So I just figured I'd play Altuve calling a shot because that gets me fired up.
I like his, you just got to keep pushing forward. Now, do you think at some point we will get any, I don't think we're ever going to get anybody speaking openly about it until there's a tell-all written.
Yeah, no, I don't think until, certainly not while they're with the Astros. I don't think any Astro who was here in 2017 while they're with the Astros talks about it. I think the only time we get somebody talking about it is a Mike Fiers situation.
I think the difference between this and the steroid scandal is I think the fans in general got tired and sick of the steroid scandal and didn't want to hear about it. It seemed like it was more media-driven than anything after a point. With this, because it involves mostly just one, two, three teams, and because it involves one World Series, I think there's going to be an appetite for tell-all books and whatnot.
Maybe.
So we're probably going to have to revisit this every 3 months when some new article or some new something comes out. Deadspin isn't around anymore, so it'll be a little less. There will be less than there would have been before. But
good point. Bill O'Brien was asked last week about the future of Deshaun Watson and a contract extension for Deshaun Watson. Here's what the head coach had to say.
Good. And Aaron, another great question, but relative to those things, I really don't want to talk about those things publicly. I can tell you publicly, though, that we obviously want Deshaun Watson here for a long, long time. We want him to be a Houston Texan for his career. He is a great person. He's a great football player, and he means a lot to this organization, to this city, to this league. And so I just don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of when you would do that and all those different things. You know, those things take time, and but we want him here for a long time.
Do you think they get a deal done with Deshaun this offseason, Seth? What do you think the chances are?
I think the chances are,
is it the favorite?
75%. Yeah. It's the favorite at this point.
I would
agree.
And
it becomes a question of, okay, does Mahomes do it first or does Watson do it first? I think there is a chance, I suppose, that Deshaun could just keep kicking the can down the road and wait until a new collective bargaining agreement comes out, at least, where a couple things might happen. For one, the cap might expand and all of a sudden quarterbacks are going to be making way more money. And two, maybe the NFL and the Players Association change the franchise tag rules.
Mm.
And maybe Deshaun would actually be closer to freedom with his contract than before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. At this point, you know, Deshaun Watson seems to genuinely be committed to not just the Houston Texans, but Bill O'Brien. The fact that he said he loves that man after the season, you know, like the fact that he was kind of not just defending Bill O'Brien, but staunchly defending him. It feels like he really does want to make all of this work. He's just wired that way. But sometimes that gets tested over time. And if people around him maybe perhaps are starting to get him to ask, all right, is Bill O'Brien the guy for you? Did you watch Kyle Shanahan? Do you see what Kyle Shanahan does for quarterbacks? Matt Ryan had one of the best quarterback seasons of all time. You think that was just Matt Ryan? No, that was Kyle Shanahan. So how far away is Bill O'Brien from Kyle Shanahan and what he's going to do for you? Or let's say Arthur Smith with the Tennessee Titans and what
right.
he was able to do for Ryan Tannehill. You know, like both those quarterbacks that we just mentioned, Matt Ryan, not Jimmy Garoppolo, but Matt Ryan and Ryan Tannehill have had stretches that Deshaun Watson has not yet had yet.
Yeah.
And Bill O'Brien so far has yet to yield a top 10 offense since he's been here. Three of those years with Deshaun Watson. So at what point, how much longer is the trial period for Bill O'Brien with Deshaun Watson before Deshaun Watson gets sick of Bill O'Brien?
It's a great question. Here is Deshaun Watson talking about Bill O'Brien following the loss to the Chiefs last week.
No doubt. I mean, you might have doubt, but there's no doubt. I mean, I love that man. I'm going to play hard for that man. And I mean, y'all can say whatever y'all want to say, you know, through all the media and all the writing. But as long as I'm at quarterback, he's cool with me. You know, he's got my heart. He's going to get all my 110% every time I step on that field. So y'all can say whatever, but I'm going to always be rooting for that man and going to play hard for him.
Seth, is Deshaun Watson's best stretch of football under Bill O'Brien the first six games of his rookie year?
I think it probably is. If you look at it just statistically, touchdown rate, all that stuff. It was stuff that wasn't sustainable. Remember that first six weeks, and that's why, again, with quarterbacks, so many quarterbacks have a tantalizing first 6 to 8 weeks, and then after that, that's when you really start to find out about them. And it's been good for Deshaun. Deshaun is right up in that top third, like right at the border of top third of NFL quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the question just becomes, all right, at what point is it that it's up to Deshaun to take the next step versus at what point is it up to Bill O'Brien to take the next step.
I think the fascinating thing for me, too, is if the two of them are here for a while longer, you know, if O'Brien's here for a few more years, Deshaun's here for a few more years, but they continue to kind of muck along the way they have the last few years. And look, I get it. Most teams in the NFL would love to muck along the same way the Texans have, winning 11 or 10 games a year, winning the division. But this team should have higher expectations. This team should be achieving more eventually under Deshaun Watson, with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. Can Bill O'Brien be the guy to get him there? I do wonder, because right now it's almost like Bill O'Brien is a human shield for Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson is impervious to criticism right now because Bill O'Brien is the lightning rod for everything. When the team fails, it's Bill O'Brien's fault.
Right.
It's not Deshaun Watson's fault. And that dynamic I am interested in is, will this, and maybe a contract is what ends up doing it, a big contract, is when does that shift? When does the blame, hopefully we don't get there, hopefully they start winning big in the playoffs, but let's pretend it continues the same way it has. When does the blame line for Deshaun cross and intersect and pass
right.
the blame line for O'Brien?
And that's when it starts to get dicey in terms of interpersonal relations. And that's when right. Deshaun Watson also, he's still relatively young in his career now, very young in his career. I'm not optimistic that Deshaun's going to keep on playing into his late 30s, given the abuse that he takes. You know, like you watch when Mahomes scrambles. Mahomes has an ability to scramble, and it's not nearly as terrifying as when Deshaun scrambles.
Yeah.
When Deshaun scrambles, my heart stops beating. Mm-hmm. You know, but Mahomes has a knack for kind of getting himself out of trouble, and how much of that is because he's got a better team around him and all of that. I guess that's kind of what we're talking about right here. But I would imagine right now this is the Texans need to strike while the iron is hot and get Deshaun under contract, because I think he is the future of this team with or without Bill O'Brien. If the further you go down the road, and if Bill O'Brien doesn't start yielding better offensive performances, you know, then Deshaun might start pushing, or at least it might just become obvious that you got to try something else. If the Texans don't have a top 10 offense next year, there's just no possible way that you can continue with Bill O'Brien as your actual offensive coordinator.
No.
There's not, because you'll have Deshaun Watson still locked up. And if you want to find out what Deshaun Watson actually is, next year is do or die time. You can't possibly have another slightly above average offense and continue with Bill O'Brien after next year.
Yeah, well, especially do or die time if they get a deal done like Troy at Texans Cap put together. There's an article on Texans Cap just went up about 15 minutes ago. And for those who don't know, Texans Cap is a website that does a great job breaking down the intricacies of the contractual news with the Texans, salary cap space, projecting what big contracts might look like. I'm guessing there will be an article about Laremy Tunsil on that site coming out soon. But if you're interested in what a Deshaun Watson contract extension might look like, and you're into kind of the nerdy part of it where it's, you know, the guaranteed money and the cap hits and the, you know, all the different bonuses and the different ways you can structure it, he goes into tremendous, tremendous detail on here. I'll give the parts that are most radio friendly, Seth, is that Troy projects that the new money average per year for Deshaun Watson in a contract extension done this offseason before Patrick Mahomes would make him the highest paid average per year in new money in the league. Russell Wilson's the leader right now, $35 million a year. This contract is projected for Deshaun to be at $38 million a year. The three-year cash flow, Russell Wilson is the highest with $114 million over the first 3 years of the deal. Deshaun's would be $126.5 million. And the big thing, the full guarantee, Matt Ryan has the, well, total guarantee value, Jared Goff is the biggest right now at $110 million. Deshaun would be the biggest at $113 million. So he would become the highest paid average per year, the highest paid in a three-year cash flow, and the most guaranteed money of any player in the history of the league.
And I think with all of those, it sounds like a lot, and it is. I mean, it's a lot of actual money, but in terms of where you rank, there's a really good chance that when the CBA, when the new salary cap goes into effect in a couple of years, that these numbers will be dwarfed.
Yeah.
And that's where it could behoove the Texans, if you want to move forward for at least the next 5 years with Deshaun Watson, which I think everybody does, most people do, then lock him up now, pay him a boatload of money. And whether it's Bill O'Brien or somebody else as the head coach, you actually might have a relative bargain 2 or 3 years down the road.
The cap hit, which is the big thing, his cap hit in 2020 would be $25.4 million. In 2021, it'd be $29.6 million. Then it starts to go up, 34.6, 33.1, and then 2024 and 2025, you're getting into the 35 and 36 million range. So, that's It's big money, obviously. It's way more than what you've been paying Deshaun Watson. That's the going rate for a franchise quarterback. And the good thing about this, Seth, is I feel like there's a lot of quarterbacks that sign deals like this where you go, well, that's just the going rate for a franchise quarterback, and they're not really franchise quarterbacks. Like Joe Flacco got a deal like that, and you go, okay, well, he's their starting quarterback, and he had a really good playoff run 3 years ago, but they're giving him, at the time, you know, probably $22, $23 million a year out of obligation. Deshaun's a guy who I think is going to live up to these cap hits that we're talking about here.
Right.
I don't know that we arrive at a time where we're going, okay, well, got to get out from underneath Deshaun Watson.
There's always the old argument, too, that, hey, I don't like this argument because, frankly, it's one of those ones where you're like, all right, so what do we do about it? Where people say, well, once you pay your quarterback, you're screwed because you can't build a team around him. And part of the problem with that is that the Patriots have put down a lot of teams that otherwise would have been in the Super Bowl or won the Super Bowl while they've been playing with a bargain Tom Brady. When people say, well, you can't pay your quarterback and still build a team around him, Tom Brady's excused from that conversation because he was perpetually paid. He took a team-friendly deal every year. I kind of want the 49ers to win the Super Bowl this year just for that reason, just so we can say, all right, fine. Look, you see, you paid a quarterback and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Go ahead. If Mahomes wins it, he's still on his rookie contract. You built a team around him.
He's on his rookie deal. Yeah. By the way, we'll talk about that in headlines. Tom Brady, he may finally want to get paid here at the back end of his career. We'll do headlines in just a little bit. Monday headlines off of a busy weekend in which we now know who's going to be playing in the Super Bowl. The San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Proof that really helps to get home field advantage and then have people do your dirty work. Seth, I think you can make an argument with both of these teams that they were able to make it to the Super Bowl without having to play the second best team in their respective conferences. The Chiefs didn't have to play the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh.
And I think the Saints, I know the Saints were the 3 seed. To me, the Saints are a better team than the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
They're a more complete team than the Green Bay Packers. The Packers were a little bit of a phony team. The 49ers didn't have to face the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs either. Now, they beat them during the regular season, so they earned that number 1 seed by beating the Saints in the regular season.
I guess the question becomes, okay, but are those genuinely, they were the second best regular season teams, but they obviously had serious flaws when it came to the playoffs.
And they did. I guess my point is that the Chiefs got to the playoffs by playing the Texans and the Titans
right
at home.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of dirty work done for them.
Row of...
Yeah, and the Niners got there by winning the NFC North essentially. They beat the Vikings and the Packers.
You know,
the biggest
disappointment about the Ravens was that the Ravens abandoned what I had said about the Ravens all season long was there's this theory that, hey, if the Ravens get behind because they're a run-based team, then they're not going to be able to come back. Well, the Ravens were down by 2 touchdowns, and they abandoned the run. My whole argument the whole season was, have you watched the Ravens' rushing attack? They don't need to pass the ball to be explosive offensively. I don't understand why they abandoned what had worked for them so well, so quickly and easily. But that's going to be a test for them next year, too, because there was a little bit of that grace period where this was a brand new offense for a very young and relatively inexperienced quarterback in Lamar Jackson. What do they look like next year? And are they genuinely that good, or did they just catch the Titans at the wrong time?
The big news over the last 12 to 24 hours, really the last 3 hours, Romeo Crennel, it appears, will not be back with the Texans next year. They also fired Chris Olsen, their vice president of football administration in charge of the salary cap. We'll get to that in headlines in just a second. Jose Altuve was at FanFest, and he got me fired up when he called his shot.
Believe me, in the end of the year, everything will be fine. We're going to be in the World Series again. People don't believe it. We will. You know, we will. Like, we made it last year. We went 1 game away of winning it all. You know, I'm happy for the Nationals. They won everything. They're a really good team. They deserve it, but we'll be in the World Series again. Maybe with them, maybe with another team.
I agree with everything he said, except being happy for the Nationals. Screw the Nationals. That's what I say. Yeah. I do not agree with that part. Do you think Jose was...
Do you dislike the Nationals? I didn't leave that series actually hating the Nationals all that much.
I don't dislike the Nationals like I do some other teams, but I'm not here to be happy for other cities.
I'm not here to be watching Juan Soto in his little shuffle.
Yeah, thank you. Although, that you bring it up, yeah, I do hate the Nationals. Now that you bring it up.
Juan Soto's the only one that I didn't like. That shuffle is driving me insane. I still get angry about it when I think about it, and I still wait for the day when Lance McCullers faces Juan Soto because Lance don't play that. Lance don't play that game.
Do you think Lance has the stuff to where he can make it hurt when he hits Juan Soto?
Lance has established that he's not shy about
beaning guys,
beaning people, yeah, throwing at them.
What am I saying?
And or
of course, even a curveball hurts when it hits you.
And or behind people completely. Remember, Lance had one of the best brushbacks of all time because he threw behind the batter against
the Yankees.
I forget
who that was. Yeah.
And then they had to continue the at bat.
Yeah.
It was so weird. it never ends with another swing of the bat.
I thought about that this weekend, Seth, as I'm watching these games. I'm going, okay, am I going to be like Kansas City is the classic city where some of these people are going to go, I'm just happy for the people in Kansas City. They haven't been to a Super Bowl in 50 years. And I'm like, I'm not happy for any of these cities. Yeah. I want my team to win. I don't care about these other cities.
Well, people act like Andy Reid is this poor little orphan, too, that's had so much misfortune befall him. What the hell? Like, it's Andy Reid's own damn fault. The best thing he's got going for him right now, because he's done a lot for Pat Mahomes, but I would also argue that Pat Mahomes has done a good amount for Andy Reid, because Pat Mahomes does not sit around and wait for the call to come in.
No.
Like Pat Mahomes holds Andy Reid to a higher standard when it comes to clock management. I swear, Andy Reid is so much less buffoonish with clock management these last couple years, this year especially. And I think most of it's because Pat Mahomes is really, really smart. I think Pat Mahomes is just, he's running the show and he's not allowing Andy Reid to get all befuddled and confused, and they just keep going.
Reed.
Either that or, like, he just goes out and he's just physically brilliant, too. And
yeah, well, or they get three touchdown leads and the clock just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Andy Reid can butcher the clock. Nobody's paying attention. It's 35-17.
They did have a couple classic, like, oh, this would have been, even though they're on the defensive side of the ball, the Chiefs jumping off sides. They could not stop jumping off sides early in the game. And I could have blamed that on Andy Reid. I would have said it was poor discipline. But then also biting on that fake punt. Like they were going up against Bill O'Brien or something. Like, they went out there. The Chiefs defense is out there. The punt return team is out there. And they thought to themselves, apparently, yo, yeah, this is definitely a punt. They were completely unprepared for a fake punt. It was astounding.
Okay, this raises a question, which I think you texted me this last night. When O'Brien was about to punt on 4th and 4 in Kansas City territory.
In the fourth quarter. And you absolutely could not punt there if you wanted any chance
to
of
a team that had just scored touchdowns on seven straight possessions. There's 11 and a half minutes to go in the game. 4th and 4 at the Kansas City 42, Texans down 17. He sends in the punt team. Deshaun comes to the sideline like, yo, coach, it's 4th and 4.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we punted here. The game's over anyways, but the game's really over if we punted here. You posed the question to me yesterday. Do you think Bill O'Brien was going to fake it there?
Well, I feel kind of stupid that I never thought to ask that question. What if O'Brien were going to try a fake punt and Deshaun kind of screwed it up by coming in and throwing a hole, and then all of a sudden there's a commotion on the sideline, and then the Titans are definitely ready for the fake punt? I don't know. I wonder, because neither one of them, I mean, I would... In that instance, Bill O'Brien's not going to get up in the press conference afterwards and be like, well, did you see? Deshaun screwed it up. I don't know. I hope. Come on.
He was punting.
Maybe he was going to do a fake punt, Sean. I mean, sure, he had completely screwed it by already doing one earlier in the game.
Yeah.
So the element of surprise would have been completely off.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what he was planning on doing.
Mm.
You don't think so, huh?
No.
All right.
I think he was ready to punt the ball back to Kansas City.
So you think even Deshaun knew?
Seth, I have 6 years.
Do you think Deshaun asked himself, hey, maybe this is going to be a fake punt, but no, it's not, so I'm going to tell him.
I think
stop.
It's a distinct possibility. I'm not going to say 100% certainty, obviously,
yeah.
But we've got a 6-year body of work in that area.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's some things Bill O'Brien does well. There's some things he doesn't do that well. We've got a 6-year body of work on the game management.
Now, Romo and Nance were saying, everybody knew this wasn't going to be really a punt. Vrabel's got a little bit of a history of some of the, I don't want to say cowardly, but some of the salvaging face punts in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
That's where a coach is kind of more like trying to keep the score from getting way out of whack instead of actually trying to win the game.
Yep.
So it wouldn't have been a complete surprise to me if Vrabel had punted there, and he would have caught hell for it, of course.
Do the Titans go into next year as the favorite in the AFC South?
Do they retain Ryan Tannehill?
Derrick Henry are both back. No,
I honestly think the Texans still go in as the favorite.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the Titans caught lightning in a bottle, and I think Ryan Tannehill makes them a better team. But the Titans were doing some things offensively that just aren't sustainable. Like, even if Tannehill ends up being a much better quarterback with the Titans, they kind of were on this run where everything was going right. Yeah. You know, you got the Derrick Henry jump pass is not going to be a staple of their offense, I don't think. You know, and Derrick Henry, as I predicted, well, no, anybody with a brain could predict that you're not going to continue getting 180 yards a game throughout the playoffs. At some point, it's going to come crashing down to earth. And some of what happened yesterday, there were times where the blocking was actually pretty good, and Derrick Henry just did not have that special oomph in him anymore.
He didn't.
Because they ran, for one, and I'll blame Vrabel for this, because you idiotically went for the rushing title in a meaningless game in Week 17. Why? Why did you do that? I blame Taylor Lewan. Taylor Lewan was doing the drum beats at the end there for they're trying to, you know, like, hey, it's in a meaningless game and the opponent's not even trying. Let's be sure we try to rack up as many rushing yards as possible.
You dislike Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Titans fans do too.
Yeah.
He's kind of the Travis Kelce of the Titans.
Yeah.
He's just this guy that's a little too much into himself in a position where.
But still really good at football.
Yeah. He's not as good as he should be, though.
No.
And especially after you come back from a PED suspension. There were some games this year where Taylor Lewan, he had some really good games, but he had some games where he got trucked around like a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, he's got a little pipe cleaner arms compared to before.
Yeah.
Maybe he needed whatever.
Maybe
he
they
was
actually
taking.
Were. I know he was crying on film when he talked about it, which that could have been the estrogenic side effects of
it's
the
true.
PED.
It's true. It's coming down from it. Yeah. Did you see this actor? It's the Chaz Palminteri in his analysis of Altuve.
Yeah.
In the
who's this guy? What was his most famous role? Isn't that one about the kid with the mob and the stuff?
Sonny Lispecchio. He played Sonny Lispecchio in a Bronx Tale.
Yeah, that's right. He was the main guy, right?
Right.
It's better to be feared than loved.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, I believe so. And he went on Twitter. It's amazing. There's all these actors. These New York actors that have all these opinions on the Astros.
Well, but they're
Nick Turturro being
Yeah, but
the
they're
chief
also they're like C-list actors who are huge Yankees fans and somehow get a lot of notoriety.
I know.
I know it's kind of it's really smart by them.
Yeah.
Like they get good seats at Yankees games and everything.
They're taking up for their team.
Yeah.
Yeah, well he basically did a 40-second Zapruder analysis of Jose Altuve running to home plate holding his jersey at the tail end of the home run trot in Game 6 of the ALCS, he breaks down the characteristics of a liar.
All right. Any professional will tell you the way to spot a liar is a liar does three things when you ask them a question. One, they ask you to repeat it because they need more time to think of the lie to answer you. The second thing is they laugh to fluff it off like it's not really an important question. And the third thing is what they do is they come up with more than one answer. Now watch Ken Rosenthal, ask him the question. Watch what Altuve says. He laughs, he has to repeat the question, and he lies. Oh, I'm shy. Oh, no, it's not I'm shy. My wife doesn't want me to do it. I rest my case.
By the way, I need to point out that his explanation for how he knew that Altuve was lying was because his third answer was that he lied. Do you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
He said, as part of his explanation for how he knew that Altuve
lied,
he said, and then he lied.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, okay. So basically, what you are here, this is like the Italian police inspector in the Amanda Knox case,
right,
who basically convicted her of murder based on the fact that he thought she was acting squirrely. This is way back when they didn't know a whole lot about criminal science and whatnot, where you could actually convict somebody by being like, you sure are acting guilty. I don't like it.
Okay, let's see if it holds up to his analysis, Seth.
You asked the teammates not to tear your shirt. Why?
What's that?
Did you ask your teammates not to tear your shirt? Why was that?
I don't know. I'm too shy. Last time they did that, I got in trouble with my wife.
Okay, so you had the repeat the question, you had the nervous giggling, and then you had the lying.
Well, no, you had all... Well, yeah, that's right. I know he's lying because he lied. Right. That was his whole... There's three things that anybody is going to do. Any professional will tell you. There's three things that are going to happen. He's going to ask you to repeat the question. Then he's going to... Did he say laugh?
Laugh, yeah.
Laugh, and then he's going to lie. That's how you know he's lying. Basically, like,
such circular logic. Yeah, I'm like, that's either the most genius thing or the dumbest thing that I've ever heard. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, nobody. Because if there's one thing you can tell from that audio, it's loud AF in there. There's one thing I know, that typically what liars do is they prefer to lie in a situation where there's 40,000 screaming fans. Because then they get to ask the second question.
You know who else asks to repeat questions? People that are trying to answer a question in a stadium with 45,000 screaming people.
Any professional will tell you that these actors who play mobsters somehow think that makes them tough mobsters. It's so weird.
Right?
You see them in interviews, and it's like they can't turn it off. They think that, like, yeah, look.
That is
look,
true.
I once fired a rubber gun in a movie, so obviously you should be intimidated by me.
Of all the types of actors, the ones who live their gimmick the most are the mobsters.
Yeah, they love it.
That's great.
Shia LaBeouf, too. Shia LaBeouf tries to act like a tough guy because he's played a couple tough guys.
Don't get me started on him. All right, let's do some headlines, Jonesy. It's the damn red wedding over at NRG Stadium this morning. Actually, over the last 24 hours, John Pagano, outside linebackers coach, gone. Chris Olsen, vice president of football administration, cap guru, gone. And then the report this morning from Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network, along with Ian Rapoport, longtime respected assistant Romeo Crennel, not expected to return as the Texans defensive coordinator. Contract is up soon, could return as a senior assistant, or he could retire. Anthony Weaver, the defensive line coach, thought to be a top candidate for the defensive coordinator position. Seth, your reaction to the Romeo Crennel news this week?
It's not a huge surprise. I was curious about how much of it would be, how much of this is based on blaming Romeo Crennel, who's using a bunch of defensive backs who were signed because they were castaways from other teams, guys that had been disappointments on their other teams. You know, Garen Conley is a first-round talent. He has that physical ability, but he was a disappointment with the Raiders. Vernon Hargraves, you got him for absolutely nothing because he'd been in a huge upset with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. And yet, okay, are we blaming Romeo Crennel for that, or is it more that we need new life in a lot of different facets? And I think it's more the latter. I don't think O'Brien's blaming Romeo Crennel. He's saying, effectively, look, we need something on defense. We need a spark. We need a new perspective. We need something, but we've got to make some changes.
Pagano's the one we haven't talked much about this morning. Is there part of Pagano that's probably like, bro, you handed me Jacob Martin, Brennan Scarlett, a couple of undrafted guys, Whitney Mercilus, who we love Whitney, and he does some things well, but Whitney is not a dynamic player the team's game plan for. The one guy that was like that, you traded him for a bucket of balls
right
to the Seattle Seahawks. What up, man? Thanks, bro.
It always seemed to me that I would imagine, just my gut feel, that Romeo Crennel probably didn't have as many issues with Jadeveon Clowney as Bill O'Brien did.
I would agree with that.
You know, Wade Phillips is a guy that would be able to get along with Jadeveon Clowney just fine.
Yes.
But Bill O'Brien just cannot handle a lot of the little nuances, little idiosyncrasies that come with, frankly, physical specimens like Jadeveon Clowney, sometimes, and I've just known this from pass rushers, they're wired differently because they're wired differently.
Yeah.
They're such freaks of nature that everything's a little askew sometimes.
They're the wide receivers of the defense.
Yeah, they're just like, okay, where God giveth, sometimes God taketh away.
That's right.
You got to accept him as he is.
Three-man rush again by Tennessee. Mahomes moving to his left, laterally chased, holding it, and gets out of bounds and up the sideline. He's not out of bounds yet. He's at the 10, inside the 10. He dives for the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Jonesy.
A remarkable acrobatic scramble on a 27-yard run. Maybe the best play yet of Patrick Mahomes' incredible young career.
You couldn't get Kevin Harlan's call on it, Jonesy. We had to listen to the touchdown, Kansas City. That was Patrick Mahomes on a play that is going to be shown on his career highlight reel someday. A 20-yard scamper. He scampers, Seth. He doesn't run. He scampers.
He kind of just looked like he was running three-quarter speed, didn't he? It was really – he's so calm, cool, and collected when he's running.
The head fake that he gave the dude – I don't know which player it was on the edge, but the dude who kind of had the corner on him a little bit, and Mahomes just stops – kind of, it does something with his eyes to make the guy pause, and then he just whoop, zips around him and then tiptoes down the sidelines and then drags the guy into the end zone. That was if it was college, I would say that was a Heisman moment right there. That was that Patrick Mahomes run.
If it was college, I would say, hey, Cliff Kingsbury, how are you not winning more games with this guy as your quarterback?
I think about that all the time. And the guy's got a job in the NFL. It's unbelievable.
Like, could you guys just, like, if you could have just gotten somebody to stand in front of opposing ball carries a little bit. Play some semblance of defense. Do you see this guy in the AFC Championship game and what he's doing?
The Cardinals should fire Cliff Kingsbury because of what Patrick Mahomes is doing. That's what I say. The Chiefs, the upshot of all this, the Chiefs are on to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. 35-24, they beat the Titans. The San Francisco 49ers, with Jimmy Garoppolo attempting 8 passes, beat the Green Bay Packers 37-20.
This 49ers team, which at various times this year, most of the time it looked dominant. There were a couple little moments where you're wondering just how good they are, and you realize a lot of it was just because of injuries on the defense. You know, Bosa was banged up, and then even when other guys got banged up and Bosa had to be used more, they weren't as effective. Richard Sherman, I guess, would be the big question mark. If you look at going into next season, okay, when Richard Sherman was banged up this year, they weren't as good, obviously. He's getting old. You know, how healthy is he going to be? I would imagine with 2 weeks rest, he's going to be absolutely 100% just fine. And defensively, I got to hand it to Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator. They have guys just dialed in and playing their roles perfectly. It's not like it's intensely complex or anything, what they do on defense. They just know their roles and they execute them perfectly. It's really impressive to watch.
All right, next one, the Rockets on Saturday night. They lose to the Lakers. Rockets look good for a half. They were up 65-59 at the half. And then the third quarter happened. Outscored 32-17 in the third quarter. And Seth, the two star players on this team, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, looked not interested at all in playing defense in that third quarter.
Well, yeah. And they were 1-for-11 on threes in the third quarter, too.
Yeah.
I think that, look, the Lakers are a flat out better team. They're better than I expect. I didn't expect the Lakers to be this good. They didn't have Anthony Davis on Saturday. Right. And the Rockets, that's where I'd love to make the excuse and say, look, the Rockets are top heavy and they've got some health issues. Something's not clicking right now. I will say, Russell Westbrook and him being a vocal leader is kind of a nice, pleasant surprise. I knew he'd be vocal, but I think one thing we never appreciated here in Houston was that there's press conference Russell, and then there's around his teammates Russell. And around his teammates, Russell Westbrook is a lot different than what you might have expected. You know, he's incredibly positive. Like, he'll tear into him, but it's all about, like, hey, we got this. We're going to be fine. I actually feel more confident that the Rockets will dig themselves out of this morass because Russell Westbrook is the leader that he is. And that's not something I anticipated.
Do you think they'd be a better team if Chris Paul were on this team?
They might. Chris Paul can complement James Harden, perhaps, in a more conventional and easier way.
Yeah.
You know, because you got a guy that you can put the ball in his hands. So they might. Yeah.
I do.
With Chris, yeah.
So we can talk more about it.
Why'd you ask me a question that I didn't want to answer?
We'll answer it more.
I've moved beyond that in my mind, okay? How far back are we going to go here?
I wouldn't ask it except Chris Paul's having a pretty good year in Oklahoma City.
Now, right this moment in the midst of the regular season, I would say yes. I guess the question becomes, but if they can right the ship, this current Rockets team should be more capable of pushing for a championship.
I have no idea what to think about that because Golden State doesn't exist anymore. The one that previously existed. I have no idea how they match up with some of the whole West has been turned upside down with all of this player change. Tom Brady, open-minded about playing elsewhere. He's scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his 20-year career on March 18th. That's when free agency begins. He says in his weekly, somewhat creepy interview with Jim Gray that he's open-minded about the process. At the same time, I love playing football, and I want to continue to play and do a great job. I'm looking forward to what's ahead.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom, what are you wearing?
Hey, Tom. Tom, what are you thinking when you watch these guys? Do you feel like you... Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, no, I like when Jim Gray started asking about his Facebook page one day. I'm like, Jim Gray has liked every single one of Tom Brady's pictures on Facebook.
I hope
that... The red heart, not with the blue thumbs up. He goes red heart on all those. Hell, Jim Gray probably has... He's in a relationship with Tom Brady, and it's complicated on Facebook.
I was hoping that he was going to ask either at halftime or after the game yesterday on his radio interview. So, Tom, what do you have to say about the whole Aaron Rodgers is better than Tom Brady conversation? Because that would be a pretty good time to dunk on Aaron Rodgers. This nonsense I had to listen to for years where people are trying to say that Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback than Tom Brady. I just thought, okay, great. Great. That's fine. If you want to believe that, then we can stack up rings at the end.
Where do you think Brady – I think Brady's going to be back with New England next year is my guess. Do you think he plays somewhere else?
That's the most likely scenario. And he'll do it at a discount like he always has. I think Brady's ego – or not his ego. I think his pride has started to – rear its head these last few years. As he gets older and he's like a full-blown adult and Belichick has still expected him to go by this whole, hey, I'm gonna treat you like crap, Tommy, just like everybody else. I think it's wearing on him.
Maybe. De'Aaron King, it was reported over the weekend, had found a home with the Miami Hurricanes, which led me to retweet the news of that by saying he must really want to play in the Beefo Brady Tax Slayer Bowl because that's about the peak of Miami's performance other than 1 year over the last decade or so. The U is dead right now. And so that was an interesting choice for De'Aaron King until we find out from Mark Berman that he actually talked to De'Aaron King. Mark Berman did. It was reported by Miami media that he was going to be transferring to Miami, De'Aaron King. Mark Berman reporting last night, De'Aaron King, who is transferring from U of H, says he has yet to make a final decision on where he's going. Quote, I haven't committed to anybody yet. I'm still looking at my options. I visited Miami. I liked it, but there are other options that I'm still trying to see. He went on to say Arkansas, I'm still talking to those guys. He was asked about LSU, says I'm still talking to them. He's planning to visit Maryland and expects to make his decision next week.
I found myself surprisingly with zero intrigue about this. I'm not interested one bit.
In De'Aaron
King? Like he's hurt people that I care about. He's hurt people, these Cougs that I care about, and I don't...
Do you care about Clint Sterner? Because what if he goes to Arkansas and that makes Clint Sterner happy?
Well, I'd be happy
Your
for
dear
that,
friend.
I suppose, yeah.
LSU would be interesting because this is going to be an interesting season for LSU.
Oh, okay, now I'm interested.
Yeah. Joe Burrow gone. His top two lieutenants, Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, gone.
It's a brain drain.
It's a big time brain drain. Yeah,
it's sometimes hard to do. There hasn't always been a whole lot of brain.
Payne.
There hasn't been a ton of brain to drain at LSU. Now
not.
All of a sudden you've got an incredible amount of brain and it's draining.
It is.
Can LSU, it used to be, hey, can LSU actually find a quarterback? When in fact it's, can LSU actually keep a brain around?
Yeah.
Because they had a bunch of them.
They did.
All right? Now you got to replace some of these brains.
A lot of brains you got to replace.
Look, nobody from LSU is going to get a... Ardent Les Miles fans will tell you that Les Miles' brain was not his biggest attribute.
Let's be honest. It's a holiday.
Yeah.
99% of LSU fans are still sleeping it off right now.
Okay.
They're not even up listening to us. And it's a holiday, so I can drop a headline like this into the headlines portion because the kids aren't in the car on the way to school. Did you see this story about the hearing-impaired individual that's suing Pornhub, Seth?
For what?
Because the closed captioning is not optimal. It doesn't have the closed captions.
You don't have closed captioning?
The guy's name is Yaroslav Suris. He's suing the popular website, claiming it's denied the deaf and hearing impaired access to its videos that others can enjoy. According to the docs, Suris says a lack of closed captioning violates their rights under the Americans with Disability
Act.
It's
clear. I mean, you can watch. I feel like they do a good enough job. This has always been one of the best parts of those films is that, like, oh, I could watch on mute and know that, oh, this young gentleman is clearly here to try to help his female friend get unstuck from underneath the coffee table. Oh, whoops, he slipped. Or, look, he's here to fix the refrigerator.
Speak for yourself. I like to follow the storylines.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You can follow the storyline. You don't need the actual closed caption.
No, I like the dialogue.
Oh, okay.
I like to, you know, I'm into the timeless art of seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I like to hear what the storylines are and what the banter is like between the two thespians before they get to the climax of the scene.
Frankly, I think it should be a law to ban any dialogue at all because all it does is give young men the wrong impression of actually how you talk to people, like how you talk to women. Like it should really, there should be a disclaimer at the beginning of like, listen, unless you're super good looking, this is not the best line to use, okay? This will likely get you walked away on.
The government's going to pass a law. We're not banning porn. We are banning dialogue.
What you need to understand is this type of talk, usually you need at least a 3-hour preamble of asking questions, right. Listening, and doing all these, feeling her out, you know, like all these kind of, well, you know, no, I mean, like, you know, in conversation.
And a nice car. Yeah. That helps too.
If only that. Do not attempt these lines unless some rapport has been established.
There you go.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.